हरिः नो सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 35. How many pages are there? 36. O sadhakas, one must accept proximity with both bad and good people as one passes his life. This equally applies to householders and renunciates. Proximity must be there. Nevertheless, one should not engage in bad associations. Giving in charity, accepting charity, revealing one's mind, hearing one's mind, accepting foods and giving foods. If done with love, these are called sangha, or association. Giving some foodstuffs to a hungry person, accepting some charity from a pious man, is done out of duty, not out of love. Even if they are materialists, this type of engagement is not considered association. But if they are pure devotees, then such activities are performed out of love. When acts are performed out of love, then it is association. Therefore, giving charity to pure Vaishnavas and accepting items or wealth from them becomes satsanga. Giving charity to a materialist or accepting charity from one, if done out of love, becomes asatsanga. Right? So the whole point is it's the mood. As we can see in the devotional service, it's all about the mood. Right? It means you're performing the activity how expertly it's performed. That's nice. That's according to your ability, according to your skill. But then you have the aspect is that the mood is more important, that it's being done to please Krishna. That's more important. So the same way is that when that element of affection is there, that's what creates satsanga or asatsanga. That makes sense. Right? If one's in the association of devotees, it's with affection. So then it's satsanga. Then if it's with non-devotees, then if it's with affection, then it's asatsanga. Right? But if it's done out of duty, you know, what's correct, what's proper, what's appropriate, like that, then that's not. That's just, as he points out, one must accept that one will be with other people. Like that. And it's not that all other people are always devotees. Like that. So it's just the way it is. You know, because if one otherwise says, okay, I'll give up a satsanga by not being with anybody. Right, you'll have a problem because you'll have to go out in the middle of the forest. And nowadays, there's, you know, somebody's going to come by in one of those, you know, four-wheel thingies like that and set up their tent and all that. So it's not going to work, right? So his point is, you just get used to it. It's just a matter of your affection is with the devotees and your affection is not with the non-devotees. There's no hope of achieving devotion to Krishna until one gives up an unholy association in this way. A renunciate Vaishnava should accept whatever alms he receives by madukari, or begging, at the house of an honest householder with the above mentioned consideration. You should always remember the difference between gross begging and madukari. A grihastha Vaishnav should accept prasad, grains and drinks, in the house of another grihastha who has pure character. One should always be cautious about taking prasad in the house of a non-devotee and one with bad character. Madukari means is that you're just taking something from each place and whatever Krishna gives, then, you know, then you're happy with. And then generally they have a, you know, an amount of how many houses to go to, a recommended number of houses. And so if you, you know, attain your quota before that, you can either stop or continue, and then you have something to give away in charity. But if you, you go to that many houses and you don't get what you consider your quota, then that's all you're going to get. You don't keep going. You don't spend the extra time, right? You know, just like for the household, he doesn't spend extra time on his occupation because he would like more money. You know, he spends his 8 hours, whatever comes in that 8 hours, then that's what he's satisfied with. You know, if he wants more, figure out something that will give more return within the same 8 hours. Does that make sense? So the same with it, that when one's begging, then it has the same principle. You have a certain amount that you go begging, and that's what it is, yes.
Maharaj, what if he doesn't get anything? Does he have to fast?
If he doesn't get anything, it basically means if you're being really practical about it, yes, you would have to fast. Because if you have nothing, you can't eat nothing. Right? I don't know. Maybe you can speak to the Buddhists. Maybe they can do something about eat nothing.
Kali Chand Maharaj says you can eat the air. You can live off the air. He's very thin.
Okay. Can you overeat the air? Hyperventilate or something. Eat the air.
Okay. Live off the air. He says you can live off the air.
Yeah. Well, it says in the Dwapara Yuga you can live off the air. Or Treta Yuga. Yes, sir. Satya Yuga, you can maintain your life as long as you get, you can keep the life airs within the marrow of the bones. So you don't even need any of the flesh or organs or anything, because as long as the life airs can still move in the bones, you're fine. In the Treta Yuga, you have to keep the flesh on the body, like that. So you want to set yourself up where you're not going to be eaten by ants when you're doing your, but fortunately, then it's yagyas and stuff, so you're moving. You know, it's not like in Satya Yuga where you're sitting in one place for 10,000 years. So in 10,000 years, a lot of things can happen, right? You know? But in the Dwapara Yuga, I think you just need to get some air. You have to be able to breathe. So that means in the Treta Yuga, you don't have to be able to breathe. So you could, you know, you just sit underwater, you know, do anything like that. It doesn't matter. And in the Kali Yuga, it says you get a handful of rice, like that. So I would think that the air would need a little bit of supplement in the Kali Yuga. So, you know.
It's like people can fly just not for very long.
Yeah, people can fly for not long, yes. Like that. Well, it depends upon what floor they attempt to fly from. It lengthens the experience. Yes?
It is said here to beg from an honest householder. It means it's a person who is doing Madhukari is selecting.
Is Madhukari selecting? Generally speaking, one would. But if there isn't any selection, then one might just go, you know, door to door. It means if we're distributing books, preaching like that, you just go door to door like that. What this means is that you're going and begging. So the tendency would be to go to those who are pious, those who do follow the Vedic culture. But generally they all live in the same area. So then you can go door to door in that area. So you would choose that area over another area where it's, the people are known to either not follow or they're sinful. Because the point is whatever you accept in charity, you get karma with it. Right? So the person with money, he gets purified by giving in charity. Right? One is just that you have something and to accept the consciousness of being able to share that with others instead of just being selfish. That already is uplifting. But just when something is given, karma goes with it. Like that. So you're purified by that process. Like that. So that's why then someone who's pious, following nicely, then accepting from them, you're getting very minimal. It's something you can work with. right? In other words, you're pious, they're pious, so the anartas that would come with it are in the category you're used to working with. You know what I'm saying? But if it's sort of someone who's not following, or sinful like that, then the problem is the anartas that will come with it will not necessarily be what you're used to. Right? But it doesn't mean that it can't be dealt with. But the point is why if you have an option, why deal with it?
Are you helping the one you're taking from?
Are you helping the one you're taking from? Means, yeah, they're benefiting because they give the karma. But the point is if they're not pious, it's not that they'll take advantage of that necessarily. You know, I mean, if they get good credit and in the future they'll get back. But it's not that they're taking advantage of the purity, because then they just continue sinning. But the pious person, he's trying to control himself and regulate himself. So that purity, he'll be able to take advantage and improve himself. So, you know. But anybody gets benefit, yes.
It's a cost-benefit thing. It's a cost-benefit thing.
Of course. I mean, it's anything. That's why, you know, receiving, you know, grains, drinks, you know, like that, or and from somebody else, you get that with it. When you've paid for something, you don't get the karma, but you get the consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So, not that it's much better. You know? But the point is there's no karma coming with it, but the consciousness is there. Because you've paid, so it's not charity. That's the difference. Yes.
The anartas come with it. It's not the source that you're normally used to taking charity from. And how do you perceive that?
No, it's not so much the source that you're used to taking from. What I'm saying is, let's say there's a pious person following the Vedic culture, and there's another pious person following the Vedic culture. So the anartas that they're dealing with, though in their sphere, may be quite strong, but in reality they're not. You know what I'm saying? No, we're talking about a pious person following the Vedic culture. It means that he's worried that he ate too much, or he's too absorbed in sense gratification, you know, in eating prasad, or, you know, things like that, or, you know what I'm saying? But the person who's not following, then sinful activities is their standard life, so then actually the reactions, consciousness coming with it are much greater.
So you would feel that, you would notice that something strange that's not coming from me, it's coming from outside?
Generally. But the point is depends upon how astute you are, but the point is you have to deal with it in any case. So the point is you are going to choose that source that's going to give the least amount of distraction. Very mystic.
I've been told that when the plane goes up,
No. I'm just saying, sitting there in the smoke, shudder, getting the full experience. You
know. All senses are engaged.
Yes, yeah. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's just whatever's charity, you get something comes with it. So the point is bottom line is nothing's free. This idea I'm going to get something for free, no, you get something with it. Like that. So that's why if everything's connected to Krishna, then there's not a problem. But if it's yours and then you connect it to Krishna, then there's more of a difficulty. You know, it's just like when Prabhupada was in, I think, Kenya. He got, you know, a nice donation from the gentleman there, but the gentleman, his business was alcohol. It's a very big, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a very big company there. And his relatives, I think, are the one that run these huge distilleries and that in Rajasthan. Like that, you know, so it's like. So he wouldn't deal with that, the money. You know, because much of the time he would take money he would be given as donation, put it in an account, and then use it himself, decide what projects and different things to use for within the society. but because it was coming from that background, so it will be carrying more sin, he just gave it directly to the deities. Like that. Because it's also, you get something in charity, immediately give it away, that's, you get great benefit for that also. You get greater benefit from having just given it away. Because right? There's a sense you get it, and then it's yours, and then here, so you get it and just immediately give it. So then, so Prabhupada did like that with that money. So it's understood. It's, you have to be careful of the source of the money.
So if we get something and Prabhupada accepting it, we say put it in front of the deities? Is that
no, no, no. It means he'll take it, but then as soon as he gets back to the temple, he just gives it to the deities. Like that. But what we're meaning is that it's just like, let's say, the devotees go out and they collect, you know, funds. But if they're collecting for, you know, a temple project or something like that, then they don't have to worry about the reactions, right? But if that's their way of maintaining themselves, then you have to worry about reactions. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... Is that something? Yes.
What about there, Mars? What about there, somebody's maintaining
this distribution? It means it's the same principle. You know? But the point is because the activity is directly preaching, then it is very purifying. So then one will, you know, generally do okay. But the point is to, in other words, if you're doing book distribution from the platform that it's preaching, and from doing that you are able to take care of yourself, you know, so you're looking at it from a brahminical point of view. Because Prabhupada in the Upadeshamrita explains that you're giving knowledge and people being appreciative of that are giving a dakshin. It's not you're selling a book. Right? You're giving knowledge and they're reciprocating. Does that make sense? That's the brahminical, so it's based on the preaching. If you're doing it because you sell things, you know, does that make sense? So then it's a business, like business. So then you have the element that there's going to be a little bit more of the, that aspect of, because then it's yours, and then it's, you understand, rather than it's preaching and then whatever Krishna provides. So the mentality is very much part of the thing. One can say, no, no, it's all for preaching and all this and that, but the point is the mentality is what decides what it is. Right? Now, if someone could be selling stickers, but they sell books, then, you know, there's the business consideration, but they consider the books are better, so that's in a pure state, so then that becomes more purifying. You know what I'm saying? Yes, so there's gradations. So the point is it's the best within a business consideration. Does that make sense? But the others, how Prabhupada gave the book distribution is that it's preaching. But the point is that any mentality can relate to the book distribution. You know, that's the thing about the direct activities, is everyone can relate. So the Brahman is distributing knowledge. The Kshatriya, then you're establishing, you know, the proper standards. The Vaishya, you're making money. And the Shudra, it's the art of selling. You know what I'm saying? He could sell anything, you know, or the Vaishya can, but it's the selling that's the point. For the Vaishya, he uses the art of selling, but it's to make the profit. So he could use anything to make profit. You understand? There's a slight difference. Like that. So that's the point, is being able to see is the difference. So it's not necessarily the form, right? Because let's say a zamindar or a landowner, then he may look like a small kshatriya, right? Because he has the land, he's taking tax from the people that are living on the land, you know, just like, you know, you take rent. It's a tax. You know what I'm saying? So it may appear, so you have lots of homes, so you're living by that method. But the point is where does it end? You know what I'm saying? Is the tax the goal, or is the tax the process? Right? the king takes tax so he has money so he can manage the kingdom. Right? So the people can be protected. So he provides facilities and protection to the people. But to do that, he takes tax. Right? Now for the Vaishya, he provides facilities and protection so he can take tax. Does that make sense? So even though it may externally look the same, you know, a big zamindar and a small king may look very similar, but they're not. Is that yeah. So it's just like, think about it. Let us say you have somebody from the royal family, right? And they have some other cousins, also from the royal family. And then there's an idea of they don't feel the other ones are managing properly, right? So they feel that they should be, you know, in the seat of authority. What are the considerations? What's wrong? What would be their outlook on why they're not qualified? Huh? I'm talking about nobility. Is it money?
No.
No, it's maybe themselves getting money, but the problem's not the other guy doesn't spend the money. They just feel his politics aren't good. He's not a strong leader. You know, he doesn't know what to do. He's missing out on opportunities. Does that make sense? Now, when the bourgeois come up and they start to get involved in the politics, what's the consideration? Yeah, profit, money, right? What's the complaint in the French Revolution? One of them is Marie Antoinette spent so much money on useless things. Right? She has her parties, just constant parties. But the nobility, that wasn't their problem. Their problem is you know, Louis XVI wasn't very expert. He was a weak guy. He wasn't able to control the situation. Does that make sense? But for these others, it's, oh, money. There's so much grain they have that could be spread amongst the people. You understand? So the point is it's money is the end of it. Right? Just like we go in and we say, okay, this particular situation, there's a problem. Okay? Right? So Brahminical look at it because the standards of Krishna consciousness aren't what's right. So because of that, therefore, things aren't going well. Kshatriya look at it, there's no leadership, it's not strong, there's not strong authority, strong decision making, you know, responsibility. Vaishya look at it, the money's not being spent properly. Does that make sense? So that's how you know what you're dealing with. So the point is that book distribution is such that everybody can be involved. Everybody can find a value in it because it's dealing with the platform, the soul. So that, then all these other natures come with it. Right? But when you're dealing within the Varnashram, then someone's going to have an affinity for their particular spot due to their conditioning. And so if that's connected to Krishna, it's fine. And if it's not connected, it's a problem. Does that make sense? So the point is if the book distribution, you see it in connection with Krishna, then it's going to be okay. But if you simply see it as a way to make money, then okay, it's better than selling something else, you know. Right? Okay. Yes. What's the best way to purify? Is that see that all your activities are connected to Krishna. Because then you're purified by that, and they're used in Krishna's service, so therefore it's proper. Point is, when you use it for yourself, that's when the problem is. So using it for yourself, is there actually a connection to Krishna? You know, and how direct it is. So the more direct, the better. The more indirect, you know, the more, less better. So in other words, it doesn't change whether you're making your own money or you're getting in charity. The point is how well it's connected to Krishna is the essential point. Does that make sense? But it's just another way to look at it to see that the standard is there. Qualities are there. You know, in other words, one is cultivating good qualities in the performance of your devotional service. One is aware of that. So this is just another way of being aware. Is that okay? One should always be cautious about taking prasad in the house of a non-devotee and one with bad character, because one may end up as, you know, going to programs and stuff like that. So one should be very careful about that. One cautious. Right? So the general tendency is that if not devotees or they're not, then you stay away from grains. You stay, you know, that's one of the way, to stick to fruit, milk, those kind of things like that. Because then grains are what carry the karma. Fruit and that doesn't. It's not that you're not going to get some consciousness, but you know, how much is there in fruit, right? Right. Yes.
Do you counter the negative reaction by being aware of that?
Of it?
Yeah.
You counter by being aware. No, you counter by being Krishna conscious.
Well, yeah.
And Krishna conscious means you're aware of this, so you don't want to put yourself in a situation that won't be ideal. Just like, let us say, you could be chanting in the temple, or you could be chanting out in the courtyard where all these businesses are going on and people are yelling, screaming, kids are running around like that, people are eating their pizza and this and that. Which of the two would you choose?
Temple.
The temple, okay. Like that.
Huh? Bravo.
Okay. Not next to the guy with the pizza.
Nope.
No. That was before you made the decision. Yes.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah. We know our priorities, so we get everything done in the proper order. We're not one of these that start chanting, then go out. Yeah, we first then go in for some serious chanting. Right? You know? Like that. You know, we eat hard, we chant hard. So the idea is that you're going to choose. So the point is if you could choose between taking on more reactions from people or not, you would choose what would be the least, right? But he's saying, he gives the point, one should be cautious because there may be preaching and other things like that, that someone's a non-devotee but they're pious, or they may be a devotee but they don't have good character. So you're always very careful about the priest. It means you wouldn't be just going out and taking your shot unless you had no other alternative. It was a non-devotee with bad character. You understand? Like that. But he's bringing out all the different aspects. They're all brought there. If you're living at Madhukari, like that, then that may be a reality. But if you're preaching, or there's relatives, or friends, or then all these things you have to consider. Right? So it's just like that. Is we know what 100% is, we know what zero is. So whatever it is in between, then that's how much it's better or not as good. Right? Does that make sense? Always try to figure out what's the principle and then apply that rather than, okay, he's given, you know, four details here, so, but, you know, but what about this detail? And then, okay, but what about that detail? And then you can go on like that eternally. Does that make sense? So one asks about a detail when one can't see how the principle applies. Then one asks. But one doesn't automatically just think of a new detail and then ask about it. No, one tries to apply the principle. What one can't apply, that's what one inquires about. Does that make sense? Otherwise, one could go on and on and on. There's no need to speak further about this. Right? In other words, it's, you know, he's given the points, now use your brain. Yeah, you know. Due to their pious activities, those who have developed faith in devotional service have a little intelligence by the mercy of Krishna. Due to that intelligence, they can easily understand the essence of the Acharya's instructions. Right? Develop faith, though there's a little intelligence by Krishna's mercy. So, by that intelligence, they can easily understand. So it's not that you have to be a big scholar to understand. No, a big scholar means you just have access to working with more details and more things like that. But the principle is always the same. So that little bit of intelligence that one gets by Krishna's mercy is plenty enough to operate on the principles of devotional service. So that means anybody can apply them. Therefore, only a few words are needed to instruct them. Those who have no pious credits have no faith. Even if they are given volumes of instruction, they will not understand a thing. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami has given only a few words of instruction in Sri Upadeshamrita. So the point is you're getting to the essence. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur refers to the Saragrahi devotee, right? The devotee who takes the grahi means takes the sar, the essence. So we take the essence. What's the point being made? Right? In other words, one is being careful about unnecessarily contaminating yourself by the association of non-devotees or those with bad qualities. Right? So food is a major element, right? Confidentially speaking, giving gifts. So he's now dealt with all of these. Right? In other words, you're not going to get intimate on the basis of affection. When they may ask detail, you may give advice like that. It may get quite, but it's being done, you know, about preaching. So you're giving association, not taking. Right? Charity, you're taking from better sources. You know, if possible. If not, then see that it's more directly used for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Then prasad's the same thing. It means food coming from someone who's more impure is going to carry more reaction and bad consciousness. Someone who's more pure, less. So like this, then one will make one's decision. Right? So that's by association, right? So we gave by attachment, right? And then by association. Yes. Yes, that's what I was saying, is that you may have a non-devotee, but who's a pious, like that, but you also may have a devotee who doesn't have such good character. Right? So they're pious, but the point is they're still materialists, so they still have that faith that you can enjoy in the material world by performing pious activities. You understand? So you don't want to be contaminated by the attraction to piety. Because as it was saying before, in the Asat Sangha, in the Four Prejudices. Faith can be in anything. Faith means that you have no doubts about it. Right? So some have no doubts that if they're pious, they will enjoy. Some have no doubts if they work really hard and apply themselves, then they will get facility and enjoy. You know, some have no doubt that if they just sit back and do nothing, you know, and everybody else does it, then they'll be happy. You know, like that. So that's the point.
Yeah. Sorry. It seems that these people who have a lot of faith in material things, they tend to point to religious people and say that all they have is faith.
Yeah, because the point is they'll say is that they only have faith, they're not making endeavor.
Yeah.
Because that is, it's just like this. Now it's understood, everybody will accept that if you have like a priest or a monk, if they just depend upon the Lord and all they do is they're studying and teaching and religious ceremonies and whatever they get and however they're taken care of, then that's considered okay. Right? No one will have much complaint about that. You know, they'll say, okay, they don't have much facility. But now if you have someone who's not a priest, it means it's a householder, and they only have faith but don't do any practical work, you understand? Yeah, but the point is now let us say you have a Hindu, right? And he's a householder, so he has faith in God, right? Does he do business? Yeah, like that. So he has lots of facility, right? someone from the Judaic background, right? Do they make money? Right. Yes. Like that, you know. So then, and if someone is even coming from the Oriental background, if they're not a monk, they're out there working hard. But they have faith in their religion. You know what I'm saying? But you see a lot of times in certain, like, Christian aspects, they have that faith, but they won't do anything. It's just God will have to provide. You know what I'm saying? You have plenty who understand and work hard and all that. But then they tend to, you know, be deists and other things like that. There's always somebody. You know what I'm saying? Because the idea is you have that complete faith, you don't have to do anything. No, but the actual standard, Vedic standards, you have faith and you apply yourself. Because otherwise, how is that faith seen unless you apply it? You know, you can say, no, but he has his faith, so when the, you know, when the... what do you call it? The Viking marauders come in and, you know, like that, and are burning down everything and all that. They just, you know, sit there at the altar and pray while the guy comes and lops their head off. Right? So in that adversity, that, but the point is why is that considered nice or good? Because they were applying it. The point is they can only apply it when something's bad, when somebody's aggressive towards them. What about when it's nice? You can also apply it when you're being nice and other people are nice to you. That's the point, is that the faith in God is to be applied at all times, in all places, all circumstances. Then it works. Does that make sense? Like that. So, that firm faith just means that you have, but Krishna is still the one that gives the faith. Even you're a materialist, that you have faith in it, Krishna gives that faith. Because if you look at it, the overwhelming odds are that you wouldn't have faith. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy is the big businessman. He has lots of money. He's flying around in his private jet. He's enjoying life. What would happen if for 2 weeks he didn't deal with his business? Yeah, you don't know what would happen. You know, he could come back and find out it's not even his company anymore. You know, it's already been, you know, his share. You never know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? So it's very dangerous, but he just accepts that as the natural difficulties in performing. You know, anything has a difficulty. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Whereas when the Buddha asked Prabhupada on a walk, he said, what is it that gives faith? And Prabhupada answered, purity. So even like these materialists, you know, their desires are purely, you know, I really want to speak good.
But generally you see it's also is that there's the element of purity, meaning, yeah, there's focus. I would say that's more focus, not purity. But generally you'll see that they're quite religious. The ones that are generationally rich are generally very religious, you know, in their own, you know, perspective. But does that make sense?
So
purity is what gives faith. Because for us, you know, I don't think Prabhupada would have taken it that the devotee is asking about faith generically as a principle. Because, you know what I'm saying, he would be faith meaning in Krishna and all that. So that would mean purity. Purity is a force. That's what drives. So if you're trying to do everything properly, then that faith will come. If the regulative principles are followed, then that purity, you're able to focus on Krishna. But if they're not being followed, right, then you're distraction because you have faith in these other things. So that faith in Krishna won't develop. Does that make sense? Like that. The other, I would take it as focus. Yeah, is that they know is that, it means there's so many desires you could have, but they specifically want this. So you can't work for 100 desires at once. Right? You can work for one nicely, or two or three. But you still have to prioritize.
So what makes somebody like a good
materialist? That means the point is they would have that faith. I mean, one is that just that desire that they can't control and enjoy, but that means there has to have been some success. Right? In other words, one can't get too enthusiastic about being the supreme controller and supreme enjoyer if everything you do doesn't work and gives no results, right? So that means then they are getting results. So that means that they're only getting results because of pious activity. So again, it comes back to unless there is purity, right? You're not going to get anything. The difference is whether you connect it, that I'm getting money now, though I'm making the same endeavor as everybody else, I'm getting more, they're not. That's come because I've done pious activities in the past. So that can either be with that religious understanding. Yeah, well, because their religious understanding there is performance of proper duties. Faith in God, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? Because the pious person is following the Vedic culture. The Asura is following Vedic culture. You can't be that big of a demon if you don't follow the Vedic culture. There's a limit. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever heard of a demon who controlled the whole planet? Think about it. There isn't one. They get a little part of some corner of something for a few years and then lose it. You know what I'm saying? But we see, you know, demons take the whole planet or the whole universe because they follow the Vedic culture. They have that amount of piety. But that's why we say piety is still material. It's not automatically devotional. Does that make sense? So someone can be like the demigods following the Vedic culture, faith in God. Therefore, they're called Sura. And then there's those who follow the Vedic culture, don't have faith in God. They're Asura. Right? Because Asura simply means not Sura. That means you don't have them. You know, atheist means you're not theistic. You know what I'm saying? It's not that it's a different activity. You know what I'm saying? So they're successful because they do that. You find some of the very big materialists, you know, very gross materialists on the way of just having such commitment to it. But they give huge amounts in charity, do all these different things, hospitals and schools and, you know, all these different things. They do huge amounts of piety. You know what I'm saying? You give away, you know, $1, you'll get back $1. Right, you give it to someone qualified, you know, which is very rare in the modern context, you get back, you know, much more. You know what I'm saying? So that means, let's say, someone gave away $20 billion, you know, for the year. So that means they'll get back $20 billion. They don't lose the money. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, the guy can have up to 90 billion. But they'll give away 10 to 15, 20 billion. So you're giving away like 20%. You know what I'm saying? But generally we don't think of giving away so much. You know? You know, you think the billionaire would give away millions. Most, that's all they would do. You know, the millionaire gives away hundreds of thousands. Does that make sense? You know, but here, so giving, so that's why they're on that level. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada describes Sangha Tyaga as follows. Furthermore, in order to be successful in devotional service, one must give up the association of undesirable people. This includes karmis, jnanis, yogis, and other non-devotees. Once Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by one of his householder devotees about the general principles of Vaishnavism, as well as the general routine activities of the Vaishnava. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately replied, Asat Sangha Tyag A Vaishnava Achar. Madhya Lila 2287. Characteristically, a Vaishnava is one who gives up the association of worldly people or non-devotees. Srila Narottam Das Thakur is therefore recommended, Tadera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanivas. One has to live in the company of pure devotees and execute the regular principles laid down by the previous acharyas, the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. If one lives in the association of devotees, there is a little chance there is little chance of associating with non-devotees. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is opening many centers just to invite people to live in the company of devotees and practice the regulative principles of spiritual life. Right? So in other words, they associate with devotees, giving up the company of non-devotees, and they perform devotional service, giving up, non-useful activities. Right? That's the essential point. If that's there, then everything works nicely. So all these things they're giving is detail so that you're very clear on exactly what is meant. Right? Because otherwise one might not take it. You know, it's like one would take, okay, giving up bad association, I don't associate with the karmis. Right? But one might not take it that how one deals in Mohan's family, that might be a satsanga. Right? Or one may take it in the other sense of, yeah, no, the family's Maya and this and that, and so then they won't deal nicely or interact much, and this way they feel they're being very spiritual, right? But that's not the point. The point is that by associating with devotees and performing devotional service and avoiding those things that are not favorable, not useful in devotional service, then you're properly, that is proper sadhu sangha. Right? So the point is the family is devotees. You're associating because they're devotees. Right? You're following the etiquette because they're family members. Does that make sense? Like that. See that thing? Okay. 12. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's essay on Satovritte, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. There are two kinds of sadhus, householders and renunciates. I will separately describe the vritti, or occupation, of each. There are two meanings of the word occupation, propensity and lifestyle. Propensity means one's nature, or swabhava. Those natural propensities are the living entity's dharma. By passing one's life in one's natural occupation, one can attain devotional service free from the modes of nature. Otherwise, one will fall into irreligion and be unable to make gradual advancement. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.34.35 states, he should conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by engaging himself only with things in the mode of goodness. Then, being fixed in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the material mode of goodness by indifference towards the modes. Therefore, people can become free from the modes of nature if they pass their lives dovetailing everything, sattvika objects, activities, time and place, with a devotional service of the Lord. Only human beings are eligible for propensities in the mode of goodness, and remaining in that state, they gradually become free from the modes. Right? So the natural propensity is taking what is one's natural nature and engaging it in Krishna's service according to the direction of scripture. Right? So here is then, you're saying is that you give up the passion of ignorance. Ignorance means something's being done out of lack of knowledge. Right? It's just whimsical. It's done out of pride. You know, you make the whole list of bad qualities and perform an activity with any one of them or any combination. That's the mode of ignorance, right? Mode of passion is you're doing the proper activity, but it's fruit of result. Mode of goodness means you're doing the proper activity, not for fruit of result, right? For the purpose of sacrifice. So it's uplifting, purifying, right? So here it also mentions that then within it, the activity is there, but you use sattvika objects. In other words, what's the objects, the elements that you work within are pure, right? Rather than something else. Does that make sense? So technically anything can be connected, but the point is the principle is what you're looking at is the major thing. And then you'll pick the most sattvic or actual sattvic environment or elements to work with in performing your prescribed duties. Right? That's always the recommendation. Yes?
Does that mean like
Yeah.
I didn't
He didn't hear. He's saying, like, with the Kshatriya, therefore, keep his sword clean so there's no blood, so it's that way in a pure state. Yeah? You know, see that the money is coming from proper sources, so therefore, just like the king, when he, there are fines. Okay? So now, little fines. The guy, you know, ran a stoplight, you know, or anything like that. Those fines, those just go into the treasury and are used for normal things, you know, taking care of the roads and lights and public works and all those kind of things. But now let's say a fine comes from something sinful. Those fines he keeps in a separate treasury. That's not used for himself or for running the kingdom. Like that. That's used for either giving in charity to very qualified brahmanas, you know, and saintly persons, or used for yajnas, right? Or if you can't use it, it's just, you know, thrown into water. Right?
The gold is thrown in.
Yeah, it's just, you just toss it in, yeah. Because if you use it, then you know, you, means it's just like this. If I say that you could do this activity, you'll become immensely wealthy, but you'll become terminally ill. Or you could do this activity, you won't get so much wealth, but you'll be healthy. Which will you choose? The healthy one, right? So that's the whole point.
Is the gold itself?
No, it's the medium.
Medium.
Means the point is the gold itself is what got you the item from the store, or is it the medium of economics? So the point is it's the medium of economics. It's also the medium of consciousness and karma and all that.
Is it radioactive?
Why radioactive? Is like glow in the dark or something like that? What color is the glow? You know, is it kind of like a freaky green glow or something like that? Or
but you know, the half life goes down.
No, it doesn't go away. It just stays there. Yeah, no, stays right there. Like that. If you give it away to a qualified person, then it goes away. Because it becomes purified. It means if you've gotten something that's impure, you give it to someone else, it's been purified. So when they get it, it doesn't carry the karma. You may get the karma, but the benefit of you giving it away to great saintly persons, the results getting back is so much more. I don't know. Some are saying it's an iCloud, but you know, but I can't confirm that. You know, it's too new to tell. But.
According to the Vedic.
Okay. According to the Vedic, it just means that, you know, the modes of nature know what they're doing, so they arrange. So it's just, it's waiting there. You know, Maya knows what she's doing. So nobody wrongly gets, you know, doesn't get their due, you know, on good or receives bad that they weren't. You know, everybody gets exactly. One has to remember the feminine nature is always deals on the is generally very just like that. The only thing is you know, the emotional element is the balance, you know, is how you measure it. Right. So here it's, you know, Krishna gives sanction or not, so then she carries that out on Krishna's behalf. Yes.
Did we say that we have to manage our karma flow?
We have to manage our karma flow. I would say is that we have to manage being Krishna conscious and seeing everything connected to Krishna. Then that automatically takes care of that. It's just like the renunciation, the focus is not on the renunciation, the focus is on how to be absorbed in Krishna. But if you're absorbed in something else, you can't do that. Therefore, renunciation only has that value in as much as it allows you to be focused on Krishna. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're always being brought back to, it's not the external point, it's the attitude, the consciousness. But that will be expressed through the external. So you have to have the external, but just because you're focusing on the external and doing that nicely, that doesn't mean that that's what you're looking for. Does that make sense? It's not pure devotion because you were so expert in the skill of performing the service. No, it's that you did it to please Krishna. That's what a pure devotion is. Is that okay? Yeah, otherwise, that's the problem with the difficulties. It just makes us more aware of the externals. Its point is to make you aware of the internal and separate, you know, in understanding that the external is simply the medium for the internal. So in that way, there is no difference between them. But at the same time, there's a priority, you know, which is the prominence. But the difficulty, we get into the details, then the problem is we just add more details in our external performance of activities. Not in you know, something else.
Too much shastrigarans can be cumbersome.
It can be if you can't digest it. In other words, you only eat how much you can digest. And that digesting is based on how much you can use. Right? You're physically active, then you digest better, so you eat more. You're less physically active, like that. So, in other words, just as in the physical, so you only deal in the physical, the sensual, the intellectual, the emotional, to how much you can actually digest. You deal more, then, you know, it's an overload.
This is like it's possible to understand the Gita without being able to read. That's like the other.
You can understand the Gita without being able to read. Yes, there's that one South Indian Brahma. He couldn't read, but he understood there's a conversation between Krishna and his devotee, and that Krishna, out of his love for his devotees, came as his chariot driver. So how much affection is there between the Lord and his devotee? Right? So, yeah. Yeah, so Lord Chaitanya is very pleased with that. That's why it says, you're sincere, then Krishna gives that little bit of intelligence. Due to their pious activities, those who have developed faith in devotional service have a little intelligence by the mercy of Krishna. Due to that intelligence, they can easily understand the essence of the Acharya's instruction. So he understood the essence. Well, all the big pundits that were criticizing him didn't actually understand. But if you probably ask them, they, you know, may have all the verses memorized. They can take each word and give you so many meanings and all these different connections. Amazing stuff they can do. But the point is they didn't get the essence. So they didn't have that intelligence. It was just material intelligence. Here we're talking about spiritual intelligence. So the point is, because spiritual is substance and material is not. Therefore, a little bit of spiritual intelligence can conquer the whole material existence. Like that. So that's why it doesn't take great spiritual intelligence, you know, to be a big scholar to appreciate devotional service. No, because the devotional service is natural for the soul. Does that make sense?
Yes.
No, we're talking about different things. I'm saying is you don't physically involve yourself more than you can handle. So you don't do more work or eat more than you can handle. You know what I'm saying? There's a right amount of eating, sleeping, you know, working and recreation. Does that make sense? You also have the element is that how much you can be involved in others' emotional, you know, things like that. You know, in other words, you involve yourself in too much gossip. You know, it can be an overload, right? You engage the senses too much in the interaction with the senses. It can be too much. or intellectually you get so much knowledge and all that, but unless you're using it, you're able to, then it'll be an overload. So therefore, there'll be something will go wrong. You know what I'm saying? That scholar then will be so focused on the externals, the very fine technical externals, they'll miss the actual point. Does that make sense? Like that. The senses then become jaded. Then you're not inspired to engage the senses, but you're not inspired because of your devotion to engage in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah, bypassing one's life and one's natural occupation, one can attain devotional service free from the modes of nature, because you're taking your occupation, you understand what your nature is, you're taking that and connecting that to the Lord. So then you become freed from the modes of nature. Otherwise, one will fall into irreligion, be unable to make gradual advancement. Right? So he's also here, in this sentence, make gradual advancement, meaning that engage by passing one's life in one's natural occupation, you'll make the gradual advancement. But you're passing one's life, you'll become free from the modes. So it's gradual, but over your lifetime, you'll become free from the modes. Right? It's because if you're doing someone else's duty, so you won't actually have the right mentality and skill, that combination. You won't be able to see it, because it's, why would you do an activity that's not your nature? Voluntarily.
And happens.
It happens?
Yeah, quite often that somebody's performing somebody else's duties.
But by choice? You want to, it means you are, let's say, a business person, okay? But, you know, whenever you do the business, then all the managers tell you this and that, and you can't do it nicely. So you decide, I'm going to be the manager then. Right? So the problem is he won't be able to purify himself, because he won't be managing for protection. He'll be managing for profit. So how will he purify himself by offering that to Krishna? How do you offer an activity done with some other purpose? Or he's the pujari, he does the ritual for Krishna, because then they'll give him a place to stay and money and facilities. You know what I'm saying? So the mentality and the activity don't match. So how do you offer that to Krishna?
Yes, so he can be purified.
That's the point being made. If it's an emergency and therefore no one else is there to do it and you have to do it, then you're doing that for Krishna. But you understand it's not my nature. But these other persons, then they won't accept their nature. Like if we took an assembly of devotees, big assembly, we said, okay, we're discussing Varnashram here. How many people, raise your hand, how many people here, you know, feel that by occupation, that they're a Shudra? Right? How many would raise their hand? Well, here there's more, but if you did in the General Assembly, no one would raise their hand. One or two. You know, then you find that they're really humble and, you know, all these, this kind of thing like that. Right? You know? But at the same time is then if you said, okay, who's the Brahmin? Right? A few will raise their hands also. Then, you know, could have raised a foot also.
And so then, went.
Yeah. And then, you know, a few might raise their hands. In other words, well, this and that. How do you define it? How you can really say, well, that's puffed up to say. Well, say Kshatriyas. Then, you know, a few might say there. Vaishyas, you might get a few more. But most wouldn't know. Or if they know, they don't want to admit. Because the point is it doesn't matter. When we say Vaishnav, we're talking not about occupation. We're talking about, or ashram, we're talking about the consciousness of having that faith in God. So that's the overriding principle. So therefore, it doesn't matter where you're situated in Varnan ashram. That you're doing it to please Krishna. That's what makes it special. So it doesn't matter what it is. You know what I'm saying? You're the guy that, you know, sweeps up in the park, and that's all you do your whole life. But the point is you do that because it's Krishna's park and do it nicely for Krishna, then you'll go back to Godhead. So it doesn't matter what you do. You know? But it should be your nature engaged in Krishna service. The problem is when you don't acknowledge your nature. Right? Because if you acknowledge your nature, then you can be humble. To not acknowledge it means there must be pride.
Or ignorance?
Yeah. Well, pride and ignorance come from the same source, right? Ignorance comes, means ignorance is in the position of one's identity. Right? The field. Right? So the material world is based on ignorance. It's not based on, and spiritual is based on eternity. Sat. So the reflection of sat here is ignorance. Right? The false ego comes from there. That's your identity. Right? Does that make sense? Anger comes from there. So all these different elements come from that position. Does that make sense? So there's natural duty and there's emergency. Natural, if the opportunity is there, one should take it. If not, then one takes what's the next best, next best, next best. Brahman can't do the Brahminical duties, he'll do Kshatriya. Can't do that, he'll do Vaishya. Or, if you can't do Brahminical duties in its, you know, purest state, then, you know, like begging only from qualified people, then he'll beg from people who aren't qualified. Or he'll do samskaras or things for people who aren't qualified. See, he's remaining within his varna, but he's having to drop the standards at which he works. Right? But it's understood, it's a drop. It's not that, oh, it's okay, we're just being practical. No, we are being practical, but it's a drop. Practical means it's a drop. And then when he can then bring it back to the standard, he does. But if he doesn't bring it back to the standard, then that's not good. Does that make sense? So emergency is always there. That's understood. Manu gives one full chapter just dedicated to figuring this out. How to figure out emergency. Is that interesting?
Yeah. Maharaj, what makes the conditioned soul be so absorbed in externals?
So absorbed in externals, because is other than externals, what's happening here? Right? The rock, nothing. You know what I'm saying? So all the things that we consider prestigious and all that are all external. You know what I'm saying? Underlying, unspoken, the subtle is more important, but we don't necessarily focus on that. You know, the person is there with the family and then they decide that they need more money or more social status or more facility. So then they focus on that, but in doing so they forget about the family. You know, and so then even though they get everything, they're not happy. Because they missed the point. Right? So ultimately, so in other words, it's taken for granted that you understand that. But the focus goes on the externals to the point where we forget, because you're dealing with external energy. So that's where the interaction is. So it being dead matter, you become like that you with which you associate. You associate with dead matter, you become like dead matter. Does that make sense? You associate with devotees, you become like devotees. You know, you associate with pious, you become pious. Alright? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I have a little observation that when I was living in the West, there were families that were living in the community of the devotees, and there was families that were living in the community of non-devotees, but those families that lived in non-devotees, I thought they had more bonding with their family than the ones that were living with the big community. And sometimes now I've seen that actually those devotee kids became, you know, they had material and spiritual life, but now they headed more to spiritual life. When they were older?
It's not the situation, it's the consciousness that it generates. Because probably if you look at it, you're thinking of specific ones. But if you went and scoured the Gold Coast, you know, up and down all those beaches there, you'd find plenty who are out there who aren't doing so well. Okay. You understand? And you can find those within the community where they're doing okay. The point is it's what you do with the situation. In other words, by being isolated, that can make you value what you have more. Just like, let's say, you go out, go to the village to do a program here in West Bengal. And you'll get, you know, a fairly decent response. You know, one village more, one village less. But if you go to Bangladesh, you'll get an immense response. Why? Because the country is being controlled by the Muslims. So therefore, to be able to practice their own, you know, religion is more difficult. So they don't take it for granted. While in West Bengal, they take it for granted. So it's not so important. While in East Bengal, they don't take it for granted. So all it is they're taking more advantage. It's not that it's a better situation. No, it's not a better situation. It's just they're conscious. So the point is whoever appreciates it. So by living in the community, then one forget one's natural material tendencies of gossip, you know, asatsanga, all these things, one applies it within the devotees instead of outside. While the disparity is so much greater between the devotee and the karmis that it's easier to see. So one's more careful. So the devotees in their own community may not be so careful about this. So they can get distracted. But if someone takes advantage, then they'll get the most benefit. Right? In other words, the person in the devotee community who takes advantage of that opportunity, they'll get the most benefit. Right? But next will be the person who is not living in the community and is taking advantage of whatever they have and in relation to Krishna consciousness. Right? Then third will be the person who's in the community and taking it for granted. Right? Fourth will be the person living outside the community and taking that, you know, just forget like that. So it'll always... So it's always individual. But so the point, that's why we're saying you have to get to the essence. So what is the, because it doesn't make sense by the philosophy that the person outside would do better than the person in the community. So that means, so what's at work? It means that you advance because you're conscious of Krishna and doing things to please Krishna. That means those persons were more conscious, the ones here weren't. But the point is it's being recommended to be in the association of devotees. So that means they're in the association situated, but they're not taking advantage of it. Right? They're dealing with the devotees as if they're just ordinary people. Yeah, you're over familiar. Yeah, you're over familiar, taking for granted. Yeah, like that. But, you know, eventually they kind of come around. It's how lost they are just takes longer, like that. But generally by the time they hit 30, they kind of figure it out.
Just yesterday, my boy told me a story that he was in a pub and he was, you know, he'd grown up as a devotee and he was drinking marijuana. And then he realized he was telling everyone about Krishna. And then he realized, what am I doing here? I'm a devotee, you know?
Yeah. So eventually, you know, like that. You know, so they figure it out. By the time they're married, have kids, and, you know, it's kind of hit home how long mortgage is going to take to pay off, and they hit 30. All that combined together, generally there's, you know, always a... Yeah, there's a moment of clarity, yes. Yeah. And so then they start to figure it out. And if they're more fortunate, then they figure it out earlier. But generally latest by then. But it's still a waste. The point is being born in the family of devotees, that means by the time you're 30, you could have been doing service for 30 years instead of taking a, you know, 10 or 15 year sabbatical. You know, it's not ideal, you know, like that. Only human beings are eligible for propensities in the mode of goodness, and remaining in that state, they gradually become free from the mode. So that's why it's also why the varnashram is recommended, because varnashram situates yourself as a human, and then to be able to act in the mode of goodness is very natural, right? Because what is passion ignorance? Is that you whimsically do something for your own purpose. That's like the perfect combination of passion and ignorance. Whimsically is ignorance, and for your own purpose is a passion. Like that. So, because animal life means that's what they do. Right? That is the animal's occupation. Right? So only humans can go beyond that and do something because they're supposed to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. The general propensities of human beings in the mode of goodness are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7, 11, 8 12 as follows. Satya, speaking truth without distorting, without distortion or deviation. Right? You speak the truth is that you give it what it actually means. You don't take it and push it to accommodate what you want to get done or overemphasize. Because then that would be distortion or deviation as you actually switch from one side to the other. So it's not actually what it's meaning. So it becomes chala. You've changed the meaning of it. Right? Daya, sympathy to everyone suffering. So it doesn't matter who it is. Like that. So the good guy, the bad guy, you know, the point is suffering is there because people aren't Krishna conscious. So that has to be corrected, right? So, you know, truth means it's about Krishna. So you don't adjust the truth for your own purpose, right? You have to get your service done. You have to apply it in your life like that. But that's why the whole idea is to be realistic about it. It's not a matter of prestige or other things on why you would consider the philosophy in this way or that way. No, the reality is this, and we start from this position, and we do our best to get to the standard. Yes?
How about when we're preaching or doing books?
No, there's still no distortion or deviation, because deviation means it's actually not the truth. Right? You're misapplying it like that. You may speak it nicely and it appears to have some logic, but it's still a deviation. And distortion is you're overemphasizing something that's not actually supposed to be emphasized in that way.
I heard one book distributor talk about, he was telling that, something about some children that were being helped
That's not really. Well, that's another thing. Here you can take satya, meaning speaking truth means facts. Mm-hmm. So that's an ordinary dealing. See, one would want to be straightforward in ordinary dealings, because otherwise, eventually it comes around and how you say?
Bites you.
Yes, bites you. Yeah. You had something?
Did you say Daya yet?
Daya, yes.
So, simply to everyone suffering, that's an interesting word, suffering, because still there will be pain in material existence, but if you do Krishna consciousness, one's not suffering.
Yeah, one's not, but it means even the subtleness that's there, one doesn't like to see anyone go through any inconvenience like that. You know, because the soul, you know, it's part and parcel of Krishna, and there, you know, the natural state is ananda, and like that. So, it's unfortunate if they're in a situation where they're not comfortable. Does that make sense? No, but he sees it in others. Because this is something, this is towards others, the daya. Tapa, austerity, such as observing fasts at least twice a month on the day of Ekadasi. Saucha, cleanliness, bathing regularly at least twice a day, morning and evening. And remembering to chant the holy name of God. Right? Because one keeps the body clean, one keeps the soul clean. Titiksha, toleration. Oh, okay. This must be Narad Muni's instructions. This is about human beings, seventh cantos, Narad Muni. Right? In other words, these are Narad Muni's explaining what he's heard from Lord Brahma on Dharma. Right? But he's looking at it in connection with devotional service directly. So it's being defined in that way. Bhrigu is defining also, but then he's giving it more general. Like that. So he only will describe 10 qualities. Other qualities are described throughout, but Narad Muni will take them all and put them together. Because if there's only 10 qualities, someone can focus on them. And then later on he'll define 5. Because if those 5 are there, by applying them you get the 10. You know? And then in this situation you're like this, in that situation you're like that. So you'll take it that that quality is in a specific place, you know. Does that make sense? Like kind, utmost kindness, right? So the father towards the daughter manifests that quality, right? But it's that word, utmost quality, kindness, doesn't come up in any other place in Manu. So at least there you'll deal with it, because in the family there's always going to be a daughter, either your own daughter, your brothers and sisters' daughters, or there'll be somebody, anything like that. So there'll be that opportunity. But Narad Muni takes them all the qualities and puts them together. So therefore he has 30 that he gives. Does that make sense? Because if you have that, then anything within there you can follow. So it's not specific for that. It's not because it's... No, it's that that kindness is just there to Junior. You know? Does that make sense? Titiksha, toleration, being unagitated by seasonal changes or inconvenient circumstances. Iksha, distinguishing between good and bad. That's interesting. Titiksha is toleration. Iksha is distinguishing between good and bad. Right? So that means what is proper according to Shastra, what's not. Sama, control of the mind, not allowing the mind to act whimsically, right? Because otherwise it falls into ignorance. So human being means you act in goodness, so it's out of knowledge, what's based on authority. Dhamma, control of the senses, not allowing the senses to act without control. Means control is that there's a definition of what they're supposed to do. If they're used in that way, it'll work best. Like, let's say, one may say, oh, but that will, how will that will, you know, but then that will get in the way. No, it actually doesn't. It's actually what creates the, let's say, you know, example, you have a knife, okay? A very good quality knife, high quality, chef standard knife, okay? Now, I'm going to cut my vegetables straight on the stone countertop, okay? No. Well, after I finish with the knife, I'll toss it into the sink with everything else. Right? Bad for that one being the one's bad for the knife, this one's bad for you, the knife and you. Okay? Does that make sense? I never bother with, you know, using a little thing to sharpen it. Right? Yeah. So, you understand? So following the rules means the knife works at its best. So that's the whole point, is that the senses being controlled so they function only how the Shastra says, then they're at their best. But we have this idea, is no, what I feel like, that will be the best. But that's the mode of ignorance. And we know the mode of ignorance never gives the good results. It may appear to, but then that's because you have to take, you have to be an illusion to think what's not good is good and what's good is not good. You know?
That's why people say it's bad.
Yeah, it's bad, yeah. But the point is here good and bad means according to Shastra. Like that. Not according to whims.
Confusing part that it actually means what it says.
Yes, it does mean what it says, yeah. Like the other day, someone was telling me that someone had written, you know, on their wall about, you just got to get out there and, you know, try to make it happen. There's a bright future for you and no one should be disappointed and all that. And it doesn't matter, you know, you go out there, and you try to establish relationships and it doesn't work, but, you know, get out there and try again. And, you know, even though you go through, you know, so many, your heart is broken so many times by being involved in so many, you know, between boys and girls, that don't worry about it. You know, your life partner, your soulmate is out there somewhere, and if you're determined and stay at it long enough, then you'll find them, and like this, right? So this is called the mode of ignorance. Right? In other words, you're taking something that's irreligion and making it into something good. Like, you know, this is, you know, they're really stoic, they're determined, they have that faith, they're romantic, you know, finer ideas of, you know, development of the mind. It sounds, you know, so poetic. But all what they're saying is that, you know, if you use your intelligence, plan and wait, the point is if you're going to find that right person and they're going to come along when you're in your mid-20s. They're going to come along in your mid-20s whether you waste your time with a whole bunch of other idiots or not. So if you're intelligent, you busy yourself with other pursuits, and so you're qualified. That would be the mode of goodness. Mode of ignorance is no. Now, that would be bad. You're restricting yourself. No, but how are you going to find them? No, you're going to get what you deserve. You're talking mundane. You deserve. You'll get. You don't deserve. You won't get. So it's not a matter of your endeavor. Right? The endeavor has to be according to what's proper. Right? So therefore, you don't have to waste your time with this. So that's the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? Because now we've taken irreligion and made it into religion. And taking religion and say, oh, this is not good. You know, you're wasting your time, controlling yourself, restricting and all that. How will you ever prosper? You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the things we have to be able to tell the difference between the two. So if we don't understand this, then we will reverse it. We will think, no, when the senses are let go, then you'll be happy. And if we restrict them, we'll be unhappy. It's the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say I take some gunpowder. Okay? And there's a little pile sitting on the ground, nicely spread out. Okay? And I light a match to it. What'll happen? Yeah, it'll just go like that. You'll get a little smoke, a little like, it burnt. Yeah, but a little, what if I take it and wrap it up really, really tight, really, really nice, and now I light it? Yeah, so that's the point. The more it's controlled, then the greater the experience. The less it's controlled, the less it has any meaning. So, that's the point. Due to ignorance, you think the restriction is what's bad and the looseness is what's good, when it's actually the other way around. So that's what Krishna means when he says, one takes irreligion as religion and religion as irreligion. Right? Remember, he is talking to Arjuna, who's a devotee. Right, so not allowing the senses to act without control. They don't whimsical, because they'll do their own, it's with control, because they're supposed to be controlled by the intelligence. Intelligence discriminates what's the right and wrong thing to do, what would be the best. Mind has to accept that. That's where it becomes Dhamma. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to the mind, it's not that the intelligence works out the different things, it's when the mind accepts it. Okay, doing those things to the right. Then the proper result will come. Ahimsa, non-violence, not subjecting any living entity to the threefold miseries. Right? So this is an amazing translation. Not subjecting any living entity to the threefold miseries. So that would mean in the direct context that we'll take it, that there'll be some kind of physical, emotional, intellectual, you know, yeah, like that, you know, violence. Meaning that they'll suffer because of the thing. But it also means here, the threefold miseries, consciousness, that the consciousness is exposed to the threefold miseries. And that comes because of not being God conscious. So actually not being God conscious is violence to the soul. Does that make sense? Because therefore the soul gets subjected to the threefold miseries, which will have their particular detail on the physical, intellectual, mental platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. Brahmacharya. Continence, or abstaining from misuse of one's semen. Not indulging in sex with women other than one's own wife, and not having sex with one's own wife when sex is forbidden, like during the period of menstruation. Right? So here, brahmacharya, continence, right, of semen. So it's not being misused, because if it's applied on other women than its own wife, then if it produces a child, then the child belongs to whoever the woman belongs to. It's not your child, right? People get all this thing and fight over it. It's not yours. Let's say you have some land, okay? It's your land. I come to your land and I plant some crops there. What comes up out of the ground, can I claim it's mine? No. It's on your land. It's yours. It's that simple. That's what's so nice about Manu. Right? It's just so simple. You know whose child is who. It's whoever the woman belongs to. It's her child. It doesn't matter who fathered the child. Who is the authority of the child is whoever is connected with the woman. Right? So if she remarries someone else, those children belong to the man she remarried, not to the one who fathered them. So out of kindness and out of consideration and relationship, they can say, okay, but by legal and authority, they can't demand that it's my children. No, they're not your children. Does that make sense? That's the way it goes. So therefore, it's a waste. Or it's having sex with another wife when sex is forbidden. Because otherwise, then you get you won't get a proper child. Right? It means during menstruation, then the womb is impure. So if a child is conceived at that time, then you don't really want to know what kind of mentality they're going to be. Right? So therefore, that's forbidden. So that means, so brahmacharya means that one is either, not involved in sex life at all, or involved in sex life when it's conducive, according to Shastra, for producing children. Therefore, then Manu says grihastha brahmachari. Right? So you have the brahmachari and you have the grihastha brahmachari. So technically, in the Vedic concept, everyone is a brahmachari. His brahmacharya simply means not wasting semen. That's all, yes.
Seems there's two aspects of semen. There's semen equals children, and there's also semen is connected with ojas.
That's there. But I'm just saying is that it's also a waste, because the point is the semen is drawn from the whole body. All the organs, everything. Otherwise, why is it potent? Right? It's potent because every organ, every part of the body, the energy is taken from that. You know what I'm saying?
Is that like the blood is then becomes marrowless? Is the essence?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like that. But that pervades the whole body. Right? During sexual activity, it becomes drawn from the body. You know what I'm saying? They'll say it's produced in this part of the body. No, it's throughout the whole body. No, it becomes drawn from the whole body and stored.
The whole body has to act as an energy reservoir to supply.
Yeah, that's why and if you lose, it's because from the semen, then you get the ojas, and there's 8 drops of ojas in the body. And if it reduces, then you can die. So if you're too active, like you see, I think there was one famous, I forget what it was, Chinese empress, and she was, very arrogantly pointing out to all the ministers of the courts, all the generals and the prime minister, all these big like that, and she had found some new boy toy or something like that, some, who knows where he was from, and she was saying that how he gave her so much more pleasure than any of them in the court could. Even combined like that. He only lived another, I think, 2 to 3 years, or maybe it was 3 or 4 years. Like that. So, that's not brahmacharya. Yes?
Squeezing life.
Yeah, squeezing life, but I mean, it means the whole thing is squeezing. Because that's all, hugging, this, that, everything's squeezing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Some of us here, I take this and I push on it. Don't squeeze, You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So he's pointing out is physically the activity is just squeezing. And at the same time as you also, you're just squeezing all the energy out of the body. All the emotion, all of that. So it's just squeezing. It's amazing, huh? How they can just so, nobody would ever think of it as just squeezing. The Prabhupada could reduce it down to its essential point. So then it comes down to how expert you are at squeezing, whether you're, you know, they consider that was, you know, a great squeezing session, or a not so great squeezing session. Okay. Tyaga, right? Yeah, so that's what then before. Sama, control. No, that's what I said. Dhamma, control of the senses, not allowing the senses to act without control. So that means you're following the Shastra. Right? So that's in general, and then specifically brahmacharya means it's applied in this category, context. Tyaga, giving in charity at least 50% of one's income. Okay? Very clear about that. You didn't put that in brackets, you'll notice. Swadhyaya, reading of transcendental literatures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharat, like that. So one's income, that means what is considered profit. You know what I'm saying? He's not talking net or gross. You know what I'm saying? That's why much of the time this can't be applied so easily within the devotees, because they can't work it out. Because up to the managers is 50% of gross, you know, which is, it doesn't work, because profit is not necessarily 50% of gross. Profit may be only a small percentage of the gross. You know what I'm saying? Saralata, simplicity, freedom from mental duplicity. Right? Means, in other words, what you think, what you feel, that's what you, how you act. Right? It doesn't mean you're stupid. And somebody that's unqualified, you tell them what you think. Right? That's called being smart. Santosha, being satisfied with that which is available without severe endeavor. Right? So in other words, you perform your endeavor according to your nature. And what's authorized, what comes from that, you'd be satisfied. You don't try to get more by endeavoring more. Right? Samadarshi, janera, seva. Rendering service to saintly persons who make no distinctions between one living being and another, and who see every living being as a spirit soul. Right? So no, it means... Yeah, rendering service to those who are advanced in spiritual understanding and practice. Gramya cheshti haite nivritti. Not taking part in so-called philanthropic activities. Right? So that giving in charity means that you're not involved in so-called philanthropic, because you feed the person, but there's no Krishna consciousness. Right? You know, that was a... But at the same time, his charity is there. So that means your best charity will be towards those who are qualified, who are going to use it for good work. Right? Because there's enough materialists that are there, they're going to give in charity to all the poor people. Right? But the point is who's giving Krishna consciousness the poor? Why are they poor? Why would somebody be poor? Impious. So impious means what? Why would you be impious? Irreligion, ignorance, like lack of knowledge, lack of training. Right? So, therefore, you give proper training, proper knowledge. Then they will no longer be poor. Maybe it doesn't get rid of the money problem immediately, but it will for the future. And if you make them Krishna conscious, it gets rid of it eternally. Right? So that's the supreme welfare activity. Yes.
Or I was just an example of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. They had some money, and there was some food shortage or something like that in the local area, and he spent the money on a diorama, like a very nice Krishna diorama. And people went nuts, you know, they were like, why did you spend the money? Then they get eternal benefit.
Yes, because the point is sometimes, because it's not that they couldn't, you know, stupid Bashad and like that, he'd do that a lot. But when people are making a whole philosophical or these kind of logical presentations and all these things that are not according to the standard, then it's not uncommon that the acharyas make their point very obviously. You know, it's just like Prabhupada would talk about varnashram all over the world in every situation. And, you know, he'll make a few strong points, but it's generally making it very accessible, right, to the audience. But when he was in Sweden, which was known for being very, very anti, you know, this authority and hierarchy and like that, really, really extremely, you know, volatile on anything other than pure equality, he went in and gave a very strong lecture. Instead of just saying, you have the, you know, intellectual, you have the administrator, you have the business person, and you have the you know, your common worker, your artisan, which is normally how he did. He said first class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man. So in other words, if they're going to be all uppity about their bogus philosophy, sometimes the acharyas react by being right in your face. But the point is they don't. It's not an issue for them. So therefore, they can make it available for you. But the point is if they make it available for you, you won't notice it because of the issue. So you have to bring the issue to such a point that then when you answer it, it just cuts through it. So then when they say at the end, like, oh, so you're talking about these, so what class man are you? They expect him to say, of course, first class. And then they'll argue and this and that. He says, I'm fifth class, servant of the other four. That's it. The whole thing's dissipated. Now you can talk about philosophy as you cut through the issue. So it's one of the principles that you do is you have to cut through the issue. And even if, you know, one person who's the antagonist can't understand, as long as everybody else does, that's fine. Just like in question and answer. So many times, the person who asks the question, if it's an issue, can't understand the answer at all. But everybody else in the room does. So then it was a benefit. You know, and because their attachment to it or the misgiving is so deep, it has so many aspects. So you end up in dealing with all the aspects, answering everybody's question in the room. Like that. So that's why I generally never mind when it's like that, you know, unless there are issues about Prabhupada, then you know, it's dangerous for them. Okay, so that's Gramya says, means not taking part in so-called philanthropic. Means if they're distributing prasad, that you take part in. You know, it's something that's connected to Krishna consciousness, making the Krishna, that's a value. That's real upakar. The other things are, it's nice for the moment, but are you going to feed the guy forever? Oh, you know, giving charity, so were you giving before? No, I'm giving now. Will you be, if I come back in 20 years, are you still going to be feeding the same kids? Like that. Not necessarily. They're just feeding, doing. So they're doing some general work. It doesn't matter what kid's sitting there. The groups today can be one group. Tomorrow can be another group. So the day kid I fed today then got some busy and something, he couldn't come, so he's starving somewhere. But I'm happy because I fed, you know, 100 kids. So, have you really benefited? You fed them one day, now they're hungry again. Okay, nice. At the moment they were happy. But when they're hungry again the next day, then what's the meaning of it? That's the point. So it's important work for those who want to do pious work and all that. But more important is to give them God consciousness, because then you solve the actual problem. Because the reason they're in that situation is because of some unfortunate material misunderstanding or activity or acting like that. Does that make sense? That's why some senior men will make the point that when we're dealing with this food for life or these kind of things, that you have to be very, very careful. You know, it's, they have noticed that the devotees think because we're giving food out and people appreciate that we're giving food out, that's the real benefit. You know? No, the benefit is that people are getting Krishna consciousness because they're getting prasad. And if you don't know it's prasad, then you get a jata sukriti. You know it's prasad, you get bhakti sukriti. You mean it's devotional. Does that make sense? It's direct. If you don't know, it's indirect. It piles up. So the point is why not give the maximum by knowing it's devotees and we're distributing prasad? So if less people come, what's the big deal? You know? Like that. Almost done. So to mention here, Vipar ya heksha, distinguishing unnecessary activities. Right? You know, because it may be good activity, but it's unnecessary. Like Shraddha Rite is a good activity, but it's unnecessary. Vritta Lapa Nivriti, Maunam, being grave and silent. You know, means, in other words, you don't talk unless it's connected to Krishna. Atma Vimarshana, research into the self as to whether one is the body or the soul, to be able to distinguish what we are. Because otherwise to say, yeah, I know I'm not the body, but then we have an issue which is connected to the gross and subtle body, and we identify with that. So that means we haven't researched enough. Anadhira Vibhaga, equal distribution of food and drink. Like that. It means whatever you have, you distribute. Like that. It's not that you keep some of this and like that. It means this. Does that make sense? Like, seen examples, like say, you know, they means that the devotee is distributing some prasad after Artik or something like that. And I've seen this happen many times. There's a group of Indians there. There's like 20 of them, you know, all the relos and everything. And, you know, one of the, you know, kind of younger but more mature men go up, you know, because the kids don't know what to do, the ladies aren't going to do, the old guys aren't going to do. So then he goes up and he, you know, puts out his hand. They give him one sandesh, right? But there's 20 people. And then he'll come back and without thinking, oh, this is nothing or this, he'll just immediately start bringing a little bit and giving everybody. And they're all happily accepting it and he's happily giving it out. So for them, one sandesh is enough for 20 people, right? Does that make sense? The Western mentality is one sandash, what's that going to do for 20 people? So you pop it in your own mouth, right? You know, hey, how are you doing? No, problem solved. No? Yeah. So this is what it means here. You're willing to, you know, even if it's a small amount, you distribute like that. I saw a documentary where there's this one, forget what they are, but they're one really remote group of tribals. I mean, extremely remote. And they do that. Whatever they get, they distribute it amongst the whole, you know, group. So even if they just get, you know, a small amount, everybody gets a pinch. That's all. Not that, you know, they give it to one person or another. It's just the way they work. Yes.
I heard one team building coach, he said that he would do an exercise in Denmark where he would give everybody a piece of paper and they would have to write either a circle or a cross on it. And if there were only circles, there would be a plate of chocolate for everybody. If there were exactly one cross, he would get all the chocolate. If there were more than one cross, nobody would get anything. He had never distributed one plate of chocolate.
Because everybody hopes that they'll be...
always someone from marketing who would write across thinking, I'm the only one who's going to be clever enough and I'm going to walk away with it all.
Yeah.
Never one.
That's thing. Interesting. Yes.
That's the Western mentality.
Yeah. No. Somehow or another, we'll get it. Okay.
The equal distribution, somewhere listening to Prabhupada actually was saying that if a man needs five, then you give five. The other man needs two.
You give two. Yeah, equal means that everybody gets according to that. But here we're just taking an example that is so small is that everybody would be able to, you know, digest, you know, a 3 millimeter by 3 millimeter cube of sandesh, you know, so that way then. You know, the point is, yeah, of course, equal means what they need. So the elephant gets, you know, a few hundred kilos and the cow gets, you know, a little less, right? You know. So that's also the things. No, everyone's got to have the same amount. That's also a misunderstanding. Because then that falls into, when someone says, no, everyone has to get the same amount and that, and you can't have that somebody gets this facility, someone that, then that is this taking part in so-called philanthropic activities, because it's so-called, it's not real. Okay, so, and here we'll continue with this on. Today's Friday, right? Monday. So then Monday in the morning, we'll start with the Gita, right? And then in the, and at this time, we'll do this nectar of instruction. So it'll go a few more days, and then we'll do the Gita for both. That's good.
What about the next class today?
Oh, this isn't the... Wow. Oh, because we went to the bathroom. I thought, oh, wow. Yeah, true. Good point. Yeah, so we'll continue with this. So we're like, yeah. Okay. Good point. Yeah, otherwise, we'd have gone off and thought, I already did the other class. Well, why is this? Good idea. You pointed that out. Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.